Okay, I'm starting another recording because I think I finally got to what I wanted to do, and it was time to get off of that subject and get on to another one. And so, okay, now we're talking about navel gazing. I have some experience at that. I used to navel gaze quite a bit. And when I define navel gazing, it is an unhealthy preoccupation with one's self and I know that in my case in the past when I was doing navel staring, navel gazing, whatever you call it, I was desiring some kind of special treatment. I was wanting some kind of exemption from the normal vicissitudes of life. And almost ruined my marriage over it. I think I ruined one of my kids over it. And I think I've overcome a good chunk of it. And I try to kind of stay away from it these days. I think there's a good reason why most of the doctrine of Christ, and then it isn't the doctrine of Christ, most of the activities that Christ wants us to engage in are external and serving other people and helping them, as opposed to looking at ourselves particularly and navel gazing. I've always known that I'm a different sort of person. To be really honest, I don't know how useful it is to actually talk about that. Some people are nice and kind of give you a break. Most people don't. You can call being Asperger's a handicap, but I don't think it's useful to do it. It's never helped me. I don't get the impression it's ever helped me. I used to kind of get a kick out of doing personality tests, trying to figure out stuff from them. Even had a real live one done. I didn't request it. One of the places that I worked at really felt like there was a lot of personality challenges among the group. When it really got down to it, I don't think there was really very much at all. I think it was very minor. But that's okay. Other people didn't think so. And we all had Myers-Briggs type indication. Is that what it's called? MBTI things done. I typed out as an INTP. And it's like, okay, healer, fine, whatever. I kind of like harmony, that's true. These things don't usually end up being, I think, very useful at all, because it asks you a lot of questions and you give your answers. I don't think they tend to be very useful. At least to guide your life by. I mean, there's things where it's like, oh, if you're a certain type, these are the jobs you should be getting. These are the kinds of people you should marry. You know, this is the kind of parenting style you'll probably have. And these are all the things that you need to work on to be more well-rounded. And it's like, well, okay, you know. I've never really been that big of a guy about being well-rounded to begin with. I don't mind spiky people. People that are really good at one thing and really bad at another. There was a self-help books right up there with being almost completely worthless for you know, only reinforcing the stuff that you already thought about yourself, which may or may not even really be terribly honest. If you're not honest with yourself, it doesn't matter how many personality tests you have, it's going to reveal the same dishonest view of yourself. They think that it's going to kind of go better because they try to make it kind of neutral. There are no bad types. There are no good types. You know, but you can sit there and work it. It can be worked. They go, oh, no, we've done this over time and these things don't change. And it's like, I can make a change. If I take it two or three times, I can do it. And sometimes I can even psych myself into thinking that the way I changed it is truly me. And that's really the funny thing to watch, is when people take one of these tests, then they start acting like what the test said they were supposed to be like, whether that was really honest or not, which is bizarre. I don't know if you call that a self-fulfilling prophecy. It could be kind of like that, but it doesn't have to be. So, you know, and it just, and I, so over time, I've put it down to navel gazing. And I did it a lot, and I was looking for it to try to get exemptions from certain things. You know, like I thought it might be nice to get on Social Security SSI, the Supplemental Security Income Program. And boy, did my wife come after me for that, which she was right to do. I could do a whole lot better, and I could do more than that. So I did, you know. Now I make pretty good money. I'm not going to say how much. Oh, why not? $85,000 a year. Not too shabby for somebody who's got, you know, some problems. But, you know, I try to do a good job. I try to keep beating on the things I need to do, you know. And I started taking advantage of opportunities. That was probably the biggest thing of all, was to take advantage of some opportunities and try to live up to them. And sometimes I did okay, and other times I just said, oh my gosh, I just don't want to be this. I don't want to do this. And so, you know, you tend to learn about yourself by both your things that tend to go well and things that tend to go badly. And I really feel badly because I think my older daughter, Shayna, I think she really became cognizant of a lot of things during one of my periods of trying to get an exemption. And I think she really glommed on to that. And to a certain extent, I only have myself to blame. I should have been past that before she was cognizant of what was going on. Although I went out and I was working. To be really honest, I think during that period, that was during my New Mexico State University period, the job was really, I found it really simple and boring. And it really, I think it really showed. And I think my daughter Shayna got the impression that that was the way life was supposed to be. And I think it led to a lot of the things that she ultimately did. She was not very. I don't want to cast aspersions particularly. You know, she has decided now that the religion of Lisa and I is wrong, and she picked that up from a whole bunch of people that just are profiting off of complaining about the LDS Church and picking it apart. I think very, very disingenuously, I think. Now you can say, oh, well, everything they say is true. I said, I'm not saying it's not true. What I'm saying is they twist it around and they're profiting off of it. It's become an income stream for them. And the way to make sure the income stream keeps happening and maybe even expands, gets bigger, is to keep coming up with things that you know, are just, you know, more teasing of, well, that church could never possibly be true. Oh my gosh, these people are a bunch of shysters and they're trying to put one over on you and it's evil and da 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 da. And it's like, and she bought into one of those things. And I'm sorry, I question her motives. And I question her motives because she's given me lots of reasons from the past to question her motives. Got an honesty problem. And I hope she's overcome stuff like that. I hope she's to the place to where she can be a little more honest about things. But to be honest, but you know, she decided she was going to change genders, and I thought she was doing that only because it was going to net her something that she wanted to have, not for, I don't know, want to say pure, but not for reasons that I think somebody would transition that's legitimate. Like, I'm sorry, I am going to be absolutely rude because I think rudeness needs to be applied to this. When somebody comes and says, well, even though I'm a woman, I think I identify more as a man, you know what? No woman can have experience sufficient to say that they're the wrong gender. Can't do it. You know, they can say, well, I really like sports more than a lot of women do. And you go, so what? There are women that like sports. There's a reasonable proportion. Some women really get into it. So what you're saying is number one, you're being intensely asinine toward them by saying, well, you're not really a woman because women aren't into sports. And it's like, wow, you're a jerk. You know, you're already be jerky, what, number one. Then you start busting into men's spaces where men are dealing with the troubles and the confusion that men are going to inherently have that women do not understand. Busting into their space and saying, I'm one of you, I understand you, and it's bullcrap. You don't, and you can't. And there is no way that I'm sorry, I'm never going to be convinced. Oh, I know that I'm a woman. It says, no, you can do all kinds of stuff to try to pass yourself off as a woman if you're not one. And guess what? You still don't understand women because you're still a man. You have all the man stuff in you. I don't care how much estrogen you take. It is not the exclusive purview of hormones. There's a lot more going on there. And I'm sorry, I don't care if you wear jeans and you take enough testosterone so that your voice goes like this. Hi, I'm a man now. Everybody knows you're a woman. Or the vast majority of people do. And I'm sorry. You are not saddled with the responsibilities that men are saddled with. You're just playing around. And I'm sorry. It's offensive. You have no business saying that you're more a man than a woman. How on the face of God's green earth would you know? Even when men try to explain it to a woman, when men try to explain it to somebody else, number one is, we do a bad job of explaining it. If you're a man based on the fact that some man told you what some of his concerns are, as far as he can articulate them, you're still wrong. You're still off. You're not getting it, because it's so much of it is beyond being spoken. So much of it is beyond being, you know, it doesn't express in dress. See, that's why women becoming men is hilarious, because they actually approach being a guy in the way a woman would do it. Women think it's all about the clothes you wear. Women think it's all about, you know, oh, I gotta talk like this, and I gotta do that, and I've gotta punch my buddy in the shoulder. And you're going, see, I said, that's just, you know, for people who get so weird about stereotypes, the only way they can behave like a man, or a man can behave like a woman, is to actually totally embrace what can be seen as incredibly superficial stereotypes. Everybody knows it, that even though gender is inherent and powerful, there is still parts of that are you. And the essential you-ness, is that I'm sure that's not a word, but I hope you understand what I'm meaning. The essential you-ness still comes from the whole thing of your sex. Okay, I'll be cute and I'll try to use the appropriate politically correct word. You know, you were born a male, but you don't have to be a man. You can be a woman if you want, even though you're a biological male. It's like, fine, whatever. It's still there, you know, and you can come back, you know, some guy can say, well, I'm a very butch woman, and you're going, yeah, but you're kind of a standard man. This is, I'm kind of confused about why you changed, because you're almost trying to redefine the other sex simply to fit you. It says, and that's silly. You know, be what you are. Quit trying to be something you're not, and then say, well, my definition of what I'm not, it actually is very, very much what I am. And you're going, see, it's circular garbage. And what is it? Navel gazing. Spend too much time sitting there worried about who you're panting over, and trans people just muddy the waters so bad. The poor gays and lesbians just go, I don't like being around trans people because they screw up our playground. You know, my whole thing is, well, I'm a guy, but you know, I pant over other guys. I really, And so when you decide you're trans, it just screws that whole thing up. So what are you now? A heterosexual trans person? Or are you still a lesbian or gay? I'm really confused. Well, you know, it's, and you're going, boy, you are counting little bitty, you know, blackheads in that navel, you know, and it's like you're spending way too much time trying to establish your uniqueness when it's like, you know what, you'd probably do better concentrating on something important, like, you know, your job, or trying to complete some other person, which I'm pretty sure is the opposite gender you are, and authentically so, you know, said, everybody can say, well, I want to be this people because I like hanging out with the guys, drinking beer, and you go, that's a stereotype, that's a freaking stereotype, and, you know, I thought you guys were all weird about not being pigeonholed, not being typecast like that, which is exactly what's happening. You're saying the most important thing is the stereotype. And that the closer you fit with one stereotype or the other, that should define you. And it's like, but that's not, sorry, it doesn't work like that. People are more complicated than that. When you try, you know, it's just like taking that personality test and then taking everything that personality test says about whatever you typed out as law, and anything that is probably more authentically you throw away because it's not consistent with your type. Or that you try to adopt, even though that's not really you, to say, yeah, I really am an INTB or an ENTJ or whatever, you know. It says that's why these things not only are not particularly useful, but to a certain extent, they actually will cause some of the weird neuroses that you see lately. I am not a big fan of the whole field of psychology, which is hilarious because I actually told Shayna, my oldest daughter, that might be something she wanted to go into, which is art therapy. It was me trying to take what she really enjoyed doing and what she got her bachelor's degree in, which was art, which I respect. See, and she always says, you're so abusive. You never help me feel good. And you're going, well, I'm totally confused. Most people would say that you need to go out and get a real degree in something that's really, you know, useful. and I supported her all the way with getting a degree in art. I'm going to get some gas. So I might be a little quiet because I don't want to bother people too much. It's 9 o'clock at night and the fire truck is here to fill up with gas. Weird. Okay. Whatever. Uh-oh. Error code. What the heck's that? Okay, anyway, I tell you, man, half the time these guys don't even have any gas. Last time I was here, almost every single thing was cut up, out of order, out of service, blah, blah, blah. So it was like, what? Okay, anyway, so I got this other one. Good. They've got the best prices. I tell you, it's the cheapest gas in the area. Okay, we're going to try again. So, yeah. And you go, yeah, and you go, oh, well, you did navel staring. I go, yeah. And I figured out that it really wasn't very useful at all. I mean, I've got issues, gee whiz. And I'm not saying other people don't or do. I'm not going to say, oh, everybody's like that, you know, trying to make it all kind of universal by the fact that we all have problems. And you go, no, I'm pretty sure there's some people that have problems that I don't have. And these guys also give me a discount. Okay. Oh, yes. So, I don't think I'm here trying to make anybody feel good or bad, but just to say, you know what, most of these things aren't really going to help you. And the problem is, these people stake their whole reputations on it. So, who are you? Well, I'm gay. There was this article that I read that really kind of set it off for saying, you know, I'm asexual. And a whole lot of people who decide they're transgendered, they start out identifying as asexual. Shayna did too. And sometimes I wondered about me, too. And, you know, that's probably one of the problems, because it was like, you know, shut up. Says you're married. You should be far more concerned about... Is that really? Okay. 2 gallons. $5.59. That's a good price, actually, I guess. Okay. All right. So, and yeah, and I'll say, you know, I was doing this stuff, and I feel bad. You know, the timing was just bad. Shayna's gonna have to work through it, and I'm sure she'll say, well, my dad was trying to define himself like crazy, and you go, yeah, and it was a stupid waste of time and effort that I should have put toward other things. And I think I kind of got down to it later, but I think she was getting way too invested in all this stuff. And, you know, and the problem is, once you start talking to people that kind of totally invest themselves into these kinds of labels, you know, LGBT, I'm gay, I'm a lesbian, I'm asexual, I don't do this, I don't feel like that, and it all ends up being about feelings. I don't feel this, I don't feel that. It's like what I said, and I said it quite a while ago. And Shayna should have picked up on this, but I think she was avoiding me by then. Which was, I don't understand, you know, people say, well, you're heterosexual. And you're going, I don't know if that's true. I said, I've only had sex with one person. I'm a least sexual. Or I actually just said, I'm loyal. And you go, you know... Well, you're traditional, and you go, I don't even know if that's true. I know what works. I know what produces a family. children, stuff like that. It's a man and a woman coming together. Any other combination just flat doesn't work. You can screw with it. You can play games and say, well, look, I'm having a child. And you go, yeah, but that's not that person's, you know, whatever. Says, you know, don't screw with the system. Marriage, family, that's what these things are about. And when you start trying to lay the groundwork of an exemption, which I'm pretty sure that's what Shayna was doing. Shayna always, I think, despised the expectation of being a mother. She was scared to death of it to a certain extent. And I thought that we had worked through it and says, you know what, Shayna, if you really don't want to have children, that's fine. But I guess that wasn't good enough. The people were going to continue to give her crap because they'll say, well, you're just going to feel unfulfilled. But can I be honest? I think that's actually a biological chemical trait of being a female, is that you are going to, at some point, have this great need to have a child. And I don't think taking a lot of chemicals, you know, taking testosterone, for instance, I don't think that really does a job to it. I mean, it makes it so that even if you have sex, you know, your body chemistry is enough screwed up now that you're probably not going to be able to conceive. And I think that was something very interesting to Shayna. She told many, many times over that there was going to be, you know, that she had the wrong shaped uterus. She had gone to see specialists, but Shayna told stories like oxygen. And that's a nice way of saying it. That's sort of short of saying she was telling you stories that were not true. She did not go and see a specialist. They did not go and do something like that. Because half the time the stories that she told were patently implausible. I think she got better over time, and I don't mean in a good way. I mean she did enough research on this stuff that her stories could be more plausible, even though they still were not true. You couldn't just look at them on their face and say, you're telling me a story. And that's sad. That's really sad that she felt like she had to do that way. You know, the society's expectations are too much. And it's like, well, we all have to deal with them. It says, and we don't try to get past them by all of a sudden saying, well, I'm going to be a man. Because she's a pathetic man. She's not taking responsibility. She is not taking, or she didn't up until the last time we really, you know, till I think the last time we were talking. She's gotten to the point now to where she doesn't have to talk to me anymore because I was abusive to her. And it's like, yeah, basically my abuse of her was expecting her to live up to some obligations of being a person and of being a woman on some level. So, you know, women can do whatever they want now. If they don't want to have kids, boy, you can't tell them and they'll do it. You know, you can wear pants all day long. You can wear baggy shirts. Women can do whatever they like. And if anybody says boo to them, oh my gosh, I'm saying, you pulled the stupidest move of all. Why did you become a man? Men are far more tied down to social norms than women will ever be. And men don't get respect if they walk away from social norms. I'm sorry. Women can do whatever they want, and boy, you better not cross them. A guy, if he doesn't have a family, if he's not doing stuff like that, if he's spending too much time on a video screen or something, nobody respects him. Nobody. Zero. No. They don't. I don't even care if he actually makes pretty good money. It still is not there. So it's like, you know, and I'm sorry to say that this is classic Shayna. Is that if she can shoot herself in the foot, she's going to do it hard with a bazooka. It is. It's like, you know what? I says, the reason why there's so many trans men that become women is because there's a lot of built-in socialness that gives them benefits that they wouldn't have otherwise. Men don't get noticed. If you're a guy and you want to be, and you want every eye to look at you when you walk into a room, guys don't do that. I don't care, you know, I'm sorry, okay, let me do an example. Batman Begins, the movie. You know, Bruce Wayne comes back, he's trying to play the game of being a socialite, trying to put people off of something he's doing, I don't know. And everybody turns to look and say, oh, there's a girl. They're trying to look at the girls that he's got on each arm. And then they notice who the guy is in between them. It's the girls that make you stand out. That's why you have two girls draped on each side of you. Hello? That's what gets the attention. Girls get attention, guys don't. So if you're wanting attention as a guy, does it make sense to become a girl? Heck yeah! The most successful people on YouTube, per capita, are beautiful women. Mostly young. It takes a little bit more than just being a beautiful woman, but let me tell you, it is that five times beyond being a guy. It's just, sorry. So yeah, I'm sorry, you know, when people say, here's a girl wanting to become a guy, I'm totally flummoxed to say, why would a girl want to do that? Well, she just doesn't want to have to live up to all the expectations of women, you know, the beauty, the stuff like that. If she really doesn't look very good, you know, then she'll want to become a guy, because guys don't get weird about how each other look. And you go, I guess so. I says, but you're definitely going to be like a gamma guy. You're going to be a guy that's at the bottom of the heap. What are you going for? You know, have you already decided that you're going to live in your parents' basement and play video games all day long? Have you already decided that? And so you decide that it's much more socially acceptable for a guy to do that, which is garbage. It's not socially acceptable at all. Guy's supposed to go out and work hard and put the money in and do whatever it takes to be a success. Which is insane. Why would you want to be a guy? Anyway, navel gazing. It all comes from too much looking at yourself and going, I don't like what I see. And instead of trying to make some improvements to yourself or coming to terms, this is probably the bigger thing, coming to terms with what you've got and working with what you've got, instead of trying to redefine yourself as something you're not, as if that's how people, see, that's why I also don't pay much attention to people who are all about redefinition of yourself. I'm not saying it can't be done, but what I'm saying is, it's usually one of two things. Either you're being intensely untrue to yourself, or you're not living up to your potential. And it usually has more to do with getting outside of yourself. Stop gazing at your navel all the time. That does not help, except if you are really at the rock bottom. Your best self does not come from redefinition. Your best self comes from, okay, I've got this problem and this problem and this problem. Let me work on those. Or saying that you've got a skill, and this is what I think is far more useful, is saying, these are my talents, let me work on them. Everybody's impressed by somebody who has a talent for the piano and works at it, and they become pretty amazing. There's something to be said for that. Although you have something to say for somebody who really didn't have any kind of aptitude or talent towards something, but really, really worked on it hard and they got decent at it. But just know that that person is going to be decent compared to somebody who already had talents along those lines and worked on them and added to it. You know, it's like some dude that's a pretty good college basketball player and Michael Jordan. Somebody who really kind of had the stuff and had the talent to begin with and worked on it. Says you're just never going to end up being another Michael Jordan when you don't really have the stuff. Said, if there's any navel gazing to be done, make sure it's toward, what am I good at? What are my skills? What is good about me? Because let me tell you, things that are good about you will overcome some really bad things. Temple Grandin is a wonderful example of that. Autistic, interesting social person, but she really got into animal psychology, and she used a talent that she had to and she let that blossom and grow. She got a PhD in these things. And now she is very respected in her field, even though she's got all these freaking issues. And she's still got most of those issues. She overcame some of them, but not all of them. And you're going, and that's why I say, it isn't really about overcoming all of your problems and becoming well-rounded. I don't know if that's really a good thing to do. That's something to do to become mediocre and unnoticed. And I'm not sure I'm really beyond that. I don't know if I really am very amazing at what I do. I actually work for somebody who's very, very amazing at what he does. And I'm not him. I definitely work for him. And I just do things that he doesn't want to waste his time doing. And to a certain degree, that's okay. You know, I'm not gonna get weird about that. I'm not terrible at what I do, but I just don't. I'm not fantastic at it. I think it's mostly just because I keep hammering away at stuff that really kind of is my calling card. And doing it in computers is just the most lucrative way to do that, and that's great. Not sure I'm really sold on it being the greatest thing. I think I'm still trying to look for that wonderful thing that I can do it and do it well, and it seems effortless to me. And I never found that. I hoped I was going to be a good writer. People say I'm a good writer, but I've never done anything with it particularly. I've written, but yeah, you know, to say, well, he's published, he's this and that. I said, I've had a couple of things. I had one thing published by somebody who wasn't me. Short story. And short stories don't go very far. They're just not that big of a deal. I don't think the one I did was very unique. I think nice people say nice things to me. And I'm grateful for that, but it's not there. I go out and I do what's required to get the job done. And I'm willing to go to certain lengths and to put up with certain situations that a lot of people aren't willing to put up with. And I think that's really that's really been my success over time. It isn't that I'm really particularly good at anything I do. I just think I'm willing to do it, where a lot of people aren't willing to do it. Too many people who, unless it comes to them naturally and easily, will just say, oh, I don't want to mess with it. And I said, well, to a certain extent, I will mess with it. And I'll pound on it, and I'll make it happen. Anyway, so I didn't want this to be a Shred and Shayna thing. I really do hope the best for her. I hope she finds happiness. I hope she finds joy. I hope it's not just a bunch of lip service to herself. Because it is really sad. If you're doing something for which you're really not suited, you don't really get very happy. That's one of my problems. I don't think I'm doing something for which I'm really suited. I don't know what I'm really suited for. I never have really figured that out. And but you know what? At this point in my life, I just need to continue doing what I'm doing, make as much money as I can at it, so I can have a good retirement, a good pension, which I hope I get. I hope things don't fall apart before I get the money. Anyway, so, and I don't know, maybe I'll find it 5 years from now, or 10 years from now. I'll finally find what I'm really good at. And it may not be something that pays very well. You know, I finally got to the point to where I don't really write with the intention that somebody's going to pay me for it. So I am not a writer in that sense at all. You know, I just write down what comes to me, and I can't say I put a lot of effort into it. But I keep punching it out. I keep doing it. It might still be writing, but it's probably not going to be, oh, he made $2-3 million. It'd be great if I did, but, you know, I'm not really going along those lines. Because it's like he already had his career and he already got a pension. He's okay. Now he's just writing to, I don't know if it's for my own enjoyment. I think it ends up being something of an obsession. You know, guys of my ilk are somewhat obsessional. And so you'll continue to do something that doesn't make any sense. Long after it is of any value. I remember my time doing computer bulletin board systems. Up until very recently, I continued to set up a computer bulletin board system and put it out there and see what people would do with it. And it's just not interesting anymore. You know, nobody really wants to go visit computer BBS, therefore it's a pointless thing to spend your time doing. But I still did it because it was something of an obsession. And I think I'm through it, and you know, once I say that, in a couple of months, I'll set up another silly bulletin board system. With no expectation anything will come of it. You know, it's not going to get popular. None of them are popular. People do it because they're obsessed with it, or they're trying to relive the glory days of when there was hundreds or thousands of people calling their computer bulletin board system. And now nobody does, you know, or a handful of people do every once in a while. They only do four or five times, and they look at your stuff and they go, I can get it someplace else, which is absolutely true. So yeah, so it becomes like that. And like I said, don't spend time staring at your navel. It's not going to do you much good. I will say that get yourself a decent job. Hopefully in something that you don't hate. Hopefully in something you don't hate. I don't put much stock in the whole thing of, oh, you know, do something that you love, and you'll never go to work for a day in your life. And it's like, that's I think, really unreasonable expectation. Very few people can actually make money at something that they really love doing. It just doesn't happen much. For most people, work is work. And you're trading your time and your effort for money. And that's a fine thing. Keeps the family fed. Makes you into a respectable person. Especially if you're a man. Lisa really likes the Hallmark movies. Every single successful businesswoman is either in advertising or interior design. And it said, you know what? It said, there aren't enough advertising agencies and interior design outfits to please the women who go, oh, I want the things that she has. But it's the same, it's, you know, and they go, well, that's just you being racist, no, sexist. And you're going, the same's true of men. Except that you've got to go out and make money. It says women have a choice. If they marry, it says in the past they had a choice. Now it's like, well, you guys have screwed that pooch, haven't you? You don't get to be a stay-at-home mom. You don't get to be this or that unless you want to be a welfare queen. It says you got to go out and bust your tail in jobs that you don't like. And you get all angry and upset because you go, I don't get it. How come the men aren't complaining as much as we are? And you go, it's because this is life for a man. We do jobs that we don't really particularly like. Sometimes it's just a situation. I kind of got a weird sick kick out of working offshore, working in strange back corners of the universe. Says, can I be honest with you? Because half the time, the company was basically just sending you there to take care of the few things that broke. And otherwise, there really wasn't much going on. You know, so I had lots of time to write. And it's like, boy, that sounds really kind of snarfy, is that a word? You know, it doesn't sound like, ooh, I'm the guy that makes the wheels of the world turn. It's like, no, I'm the guy off in the corner that keeps the communication system running, and you've got to have somebody out there that at least knows something about it. And that was me for a long time in those kinds of situations. And, you know, there's usually under circumstances where it's like, well, I wouldn't work there. I wouldn't work there either. And you go, well, I'll do it. I don't care. And it wasn't because I wasn't scared. It was because because I've got bad wiring. To a certain extent, I don't know when to be scared or to have proper self-restraint proper risk aversion, you know. Anyway, so I hope I don't have you guys thinking I'm blowing my horn. I don't. I'm not blowing my horn. I've pulled every trick in the book, and I've gazed at my own navel quite a bit, which is how I can come back and say, guys, don't spend a lot of time doing that. It will really end up being kind of a waste of your time. So, and I feel bad because I think Shayna kind of got into doing that because I was doing it, and I think I ruined her. And do I feel bad? To a certain extent, yes. The fact that she hates my guts makes me say, well, you know what? Screw her. And you're going, oh, you can't ever say that about your daughter. And you go, trust me, she said worse about me. Oh, my gosh. So when people say, well, don't you love her? Don't you want to save her? And you go, you know, at this point, if she comes back and she wants some help, if there's something I can do for her, I will. I always have. Says, but am I going to put up with much of her junk? No, I'm not going to. Probably. If she comes back to try to find a place to set up a hammock, I'm going to give her the same crap I always gave her when she tried to set up a hammock. It just is, I'm just not going to go for it, you know? And you go, but you still love her. And you go, I love her to the extent that I want good things to happen to her, but I also know that there's almost nothing I can do now because she absolutely hates me. I don't understand why she hates me. I think it has a lot to do to justify a lot of the things that she's having. When people say, you're screwed up and you need to work on it, she gets to make the excuse that I ruined her life. And then people will kind of give her a pass and say, oh yeah, she's really broken. It's all her father's fault. It's like, you know what? I said, number one, I don't accept any of that particularly. You know, it was okay when she was a teenager and she was screwed up, but now that she's in her 30s and she's still screwed up, that's all on her. She's spent almost more time as an adult now, totally away from me, and I was helping her. I would help Baylor out of money problems, helped her get a car, paid for the car. She was able to sell that car that was mostly, it had mostly my money in it. Not mostly, but some. Had a good chunk of my money in it. I never got anything out of it. It was a gift to her. And and what I'm getting from her is a lot of, I never want to hear from you again. She changed her name so it wouldn't be my name anymore. And, it's like, I'm just, she's burned so many bridges between us that, it says, I need some, I got fired from my job, or, I lost my place somewhere, which she's done a few times, and helped her a few times, and I took her in. And you're going, but you weren't fantastic to her. You weren't, like, stroking her and trying to make her feel better. And you go, no. Says, my thing is, if you're under my roof, you need to go out and get a job. I'll give you a few weeks to lick your wounds, to pull life together, to try to get everything kind of okay. I says, but then it's time to go out and do something. Make something happen. That's the way I am, and I have no intention of stopping being that way. I do not create a havoc. I do, I'll take you in. Are you going to pay rent? Yeah. Is it going to be low rent? I said, oh, yes. I try to be very generous about the rent thing. If my kids come home after they're 19 years old and stay with me, they pay $150 a month. And let me tell you, if you're a drug addict and you can barely get a job, you can usually scrape together $150 a month. Food's provided until you're 27. And when you're 27, if you're still at home, says you're gonna have to cough up more. You're gonna have to pay room and board then. Because I understand when you're young and you're in your early 20s, trying to, if you're going to school or something like that, and you need some, and you need a nice situation. And we did. And we worked hard to make sure that I lived in a college town to give my kids the opportunity to go to college. It ended up, they didn't take it, and I'm not bitter about the fact they didn't take it, But, I was sitting there, I'm mostly sitting in this town, basically not making as much money as I could make, because I wanted to make sure that my kids had an opportunity to go to college. And it just ended up kind of not being a thing. So I was like, okay, then I don't need to work here. I don't need to be here anymore. And we left and went someplace else. And I make more money, sizably more money than I made there. And, so. I think some of my children, Shane is probably one of them, resents the fact that I was not willing to basically just give her a lifestyle that didn't really require much from her. And I was one to go in and say, so what are your plans? What do you want to do? And when she said, well, I'm thinking about doing this, it's like, it says, you already have a bachelor's degree. Now you're saying you want to get a bachelor's degree in something else. And guess what? That thing, I said, I got to tell you, number one, the federal government through grants only pays for one degree for you. They aren't going to pay for it again. She got this impression that it was, it was just going to be kind of an afterthought and she could just start going back to school. And you're going, no, you're going to have to figure out how to pay for it. And so she went to work at a, at, Chipotle's or something. And it was the whole thing. I said, well, Shana, if you really want to go back to school, this is my advice would be, you're going to have to go and take out loans. It says, and do it fast. It says, and that means if you've got a bachelor's degree already, you just need to push it and get your master's. It's only 2 years out, and it pays a lot better, and you can pay back your loans with a degree, with a master's degree. And I think she was terrified of having to operate at that sort of a level. So it's like, okay. So she had learned about this opportunity from her sister, her younger sister, who had done, who had worked on a developmentally disabled farm, a farm run by developmentally disabled people. And she had gone to go visit her sister at one of those places. And I think she kind of liked it because it was good. And I said, and I've never had a problem with my kids trading their time and effort for food and board and a stipend, which is what I think Shane is basically doing right now, is doing that. And Brenna still does something akin to that. And I said, have no problem with those kinds of things, you know. Could you do better? Maybe. It says, but that, you know, number one, these are my daughters, so I don't have the providing for a family expectation like I do for my sons. They need to do something that can provide for a family. Because that's an important function of being a man. Until you're married and raising a family, I don't consider you a man particularly. You're still a boy, you know, until that day arrives. It says, so it's really important for you to at least get yourself to the point to where you impress a girl enough that she'll marry you. And then, you know, it's time to form a family. And let me tell you, family goes a long way to making sure that you become the kind of man that you need to be. And it has nothing to do with your wife going out and making a third or a half of the family income. If you're requiring your wife to go out and make a big proportion of the family income, then I'm not very impressed by you. Your wife should be much more concerned about being a mom than she needs to be concerned about bringing home the bacon. If she really wants to do that, if that's what fulfills her, and you're okay with that, that's her choice. But it should never be her obligation. For a man, it's about obligation. For a woman, it's about choice. If she wants to do that, great. God bless her. If she comes home one day and says, honey, I really don't want to be working anymore. I want to raise our kids, have our kids, do that. And you go, honey, that's great. Fantastic. You don't have to work another day for money. You can worry about other things, which I think women find far more fulfillment. Because, you know, people say, well, my job fulfills me. It says, oh, bull crap, it doesn't fulfill men. It doesn't fulfill anybody. It's something you've got to do. You know. I don't think much of that. Okay, so here I am. I'm here at the crash site. I think I'm gonna take the recorder and just keep on recording. You know, people want to know what I think, and they go, well, you know, at least if you're going to say I'm a bigot and a homophobe, you'll at least be saying that based on the doggies are going a little crazy over there. Okay. Well, here I am. Oh, in my place. Boy, you can hear the wind whistling. Groovy. Okay, I'll put this down here. Is it still running? Yep.
About 11 minutes.
So, yeah. So, if I'm going to be accused of something, it can be totally based on what I've said in these recordings. And you'll get a good sense of how I feel about a lot of things. And that sounds good to know. You know? Then it's not based on some kind of weird hearsay or people who just say, oh, well, you know, he's from this part of the country. He's white. He's like this. So he's got this attitude and that attitude. And you go, maybe, I may have that, but, you know, I can't say I'm very loud about it at work or publicly, but, I do have these private things, you know. And you can know a lot about me based on that. Oh, taking my clothes off. Oh, you know what? I really need to pee. So let me pause this for a minute. All right, I'm back. Laying down. It's 10 o'clock at night on a Sunday night, and I am recording. And the recordings go pretty good because they actually keep me awake while I'm taking the long drives. But I'm here, so I can go to sleep now if I wanted to. But yeah. You know what's kind of funny? Is that the work that Shane is doing these days, which I find perfectly acceptable for my daughters to do, I don't find acceptable particularly for my sons to do, you know? Not that these kind of jobs couldn't be morphed into a job that provides for a family. I'm not saying that that's not doable. But, yeah. So my daughter Shayna, who said that, oh, I'm a guy now, said if she really were my son, I would be saying, when are you going to get a real job? When are you going to do what's required to start a family? Which is what I require of my sons. And, she's doing perfectly fine as a daughter. But I wish she was more interested in, you know, in marrying somebody and starting a family with them. Marrying a man and starting a family.
with him as the man and her as the woman. That's kind of, it says, and you said, oh, but you're still parochial, because that's the way, it says, I'm sorry. It says, this is the way life is. When you deviate from this, you know, things go badly. And there's certainly not very much potential building. And I do. It says, I really say to myself, I said, she's, you know, as usual, she's blasting away at her feet. You know, shooting herself in the foot every time, as far as it goes. You know, and they go, I don't want her to do that anymore. You know, if she's never going to marry, which I don't think she ever wants to really do, which is sad because I think she had inclinations that way, but she was, I don't know, she just got terrified of it. I think there was some guys in college that I think that were working to become something that I think would have been very happy to have married Shayna. You know, they would have had to have worked through the fact that Shayna was going to be, you know, she really needed to work on being more of an honest person. I really hope that she was being honest to other people, that if she, that the dishonesty only applied to me. But sad to say, I found out that that wasn't true, that she was being, just telling stories to a lot of people. And, you know, it's just embarrassing stuff. But, you know, it's not about me and about how I feel. It's about, you know, what needs to be done. And so it is. It's rather depressing to say, you know, and she just continues to put herself in a position where anything that might bring her real joy and happiness and fulfillment, she always had kind of a tendency to screw it up, to like I said, to shoot herself in the foot as hard as she could. The sad part is that now she's decided that I'm her worst enemy. And it's like, okay, well, all right. You know, I'm still her father. I still try to engage with her sometimes. And boy, she just lets me know with no uncertain terms that any contact at all is just terrible and wicked. And that I am the worst person on the face of the earth. And it's like, okay, fine. I still send her stuff. You know, sorry. And I'm sorry to say that every once in a while I do it just to tweak her. And I'm not even saying that I'm being nice. I don't think I'm being nice very sometimes. Sometimes I'm being just kind of like, you know, to see how she'll react. And she always surprises me how bad she reacts to it. Oh my gosh. Like most people just ignore something, but oh no, not her. Ooh. She goes ballistic, and it's like, oh my gosh, you're just proving to the world that you can't handle hardly anything. Oh my gosh, that's sad, and it saddens me. Oh, we'll see. Anyway, so there we go. I sent her a recording. You know, I was talking about the recording about circumcision and wondering how many more people in my family have had circumcision, which is hilarious. When she gets it, she's a girl. The only thing she's had done is she's had her breasts removed. She always hated her breasts. So it's not surprising that she decided to get rid of, have the top surgery, as they call it, but that she has no interest in taking care of the bottom surgery because, you know, whatever, I'm not going to talk about. Actually, she's pretty forward about it, she says, because she really enjoys masturbating. And you're going, wow, well, that's going to make your, you know, that's going to make your prospects for having a decent relationship with a guy about zilch, you know, because it's like, well, you know, I don't feel like I want to eat with her pleasuring herself. There you go, you know. So, do I throw these recordings away? Some of them I do. I'm probably going to just throw this one away because I don't think it's, well, you know what? But some of them I just hang on to. And I say, you know what? I'm going to put it up anyway. Most of my kids never listen to these recordings because they're so, you know, they are not easy to get to. I don't make them easy to get to. I have to use an old protocol that nobody really uses anymore to go and listen to them. So there it is. Ta-da! And I can pretty much say whatever I want to. Someday I'll say, well, now you can go and you can listen to all my audio recordings and you can get a sense for what your father thought about a lot of things. And I don't want to say bad things about my kids. And I don't think I really do, you know? Shayna invites it because she's decided to make me her enemy. And you're going, you know what? I'm sure she says, well, I'm supposed to say horrible things about you, and you're supposed to say, oh, don't say those things about me. Oh, that makes me feel so bad. What do I need to do to make our relationship better? And I say, bullcrap. No way. Says, you know, says, I want good things to come to you. I think you're going to have to make some changes to make that happen. And I hope she already has. You know, it's been, I don't think it's been 5 years since she told me to piss off. Might be close to that. And I do. I hope she's being a lot more honest with people. You know, I hope all that. I hope one day she just wakes up and says, you know what? I'm not a man. I'm tired of trying to act like I am. Stop taking the silly testosterone. I'm just gonna go forward and be who I am. Now, and if she shows up on my doorstep and says, hi, I'm Shayna, your daughter, will I give her a hug? Heck yeah. I'll give her a big hug, and I want to hear what interesting stories she has, because she won't tell me any interesting stories, particularly now. So, and I do. I think I've said it often enough, and I think it's true. I do want the best for her. But I think I know better than she does what the best looks like. And I hope she just decides to stop going down this road. All my other kids, you know, everybody struggles to kind of figure themselves out. And like I said, don't navel stare a lot. Do some things. Figure out what kind of things you like and what kind of things you don't like, you know. Always have the eye toward, I want to get married, I want to have a family, both my sons and my daughters, and proceed. Growth will come under these circumstances. Hopefully, the good kind of growth. It's always usually a pretty good kind of growth. And do I want them to stay close to God and close to Jesus Christ? Yes, I do. I don't have much respect for people who run away from that stuff. These are definitely things that have been in our family and our culture for hundreds of years, and lightly tossing it aside is to disrespect the family. You know, to say there is no God is to spit in the face of generations of people who shaped their lives based on a belief in God and a belief in Jesus Christ. And to throw it away for patently kind of infantile, adolescent reasons, you know, which is basically saying my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, my great-great-grandparents, my ancestors going back who knows how many generations, they were all a bunch of deluded fools, and they were all a bunch of idiots, and I can't believe I'm a part of that. And I do. I said, I'm sorry, you're disgracing your family. You're saying all of them were stupid hicks. And our culture is far too willing to say, oh, that's okay. You don't have to believe in any of this stuff. And you go, oh, to hell you don't. and said, excuse me? It says, these people who sacrificed and did so much so that you can be here, and you just kind of toss the very definition of their lives to the wind is a slap in the face. And I'm sorry, I said, you know, they say, oh, it's okay, you know, God understands. And you go, I doubt it. I doubt it very seriously. So, yeah, this is, you can choose to do this stuff, but it's not going to, you know, do I respect it? No. It says, you need to pull yourself together. And you need to figure out that generations of your ancestors were not stupid and a bunch of deluded morons. It says, in fact, the vast majority of them were sizably more intelligent than you are, especially at the ripe old age of 20 or 30. I don't believe in God. And you go, that's because you're immature and stupid. And I don't have any respect for it. So yeah, it says you can choose not to believe it if you want to, but it's not. But I'm not going to sit here and say nice things. I'm going to sit here and say that you're pounding on the thing. And I think God would do the exact same thing. He says, oh well, aren't you brilliant? Everybody else before you, who did what I asked them to do and made it possible for you to be here and sacrificed, and made sure that you were fed and taken care of, were trying to do the best for you, and you're telling them that they're all a bunch of morons. Okay, this is, guess what? We don't have to give you any consideration for that. And I'm not gonna, I don't really have much respect for, you know, but you better help me. You better take care of me like a good parent would, even though I'm disrespecting everything about you. It's like, what? No. If you slap me in the face, no, I don't, I'm not obligated to take care of you and to be nice to you. I'm not. Sorry.
God doesn't do that either. I don't think God demands that of us. I'm perfectly happy to forgive you your stupidity, but let me tell you, when forgiveness comes is after you're done being stupid and after you say, I'm sorry that I was being so stupid. And you go, I said, you know, it happens. We get stupid at certain times, but that doesn't mean that we coddle you during your stupid times. You usually have to pay for your stupid times by, you know, if you're saying crappy things about your parents, about your grandparents, you don't get stuff from them. So that's all there is to it, you know? I don't know where you guys come off thinking that this is your due. Anyway, so now it's getting late. I'm tired. Oh, it's about 10:20. Time to get some sleep. I gotta get up and go and do the normal things I do to start getting back to work on a Monday morning. Oh boy. Oh, I'm looking forward to this weekend because it's Memorial Day week. It's Labor Day weekend. It's September coming up, and I get a day off, and we're gonna try to make it so that Lisa and I don't have a lot of crap going on to make profits. So I'm gonna go ahead and stop this, and that's how we're gonna do it. All right, talk to you later. Bye.